20 sides to every story. Hello everyone, this is Alex from 20 Sides to Every Story. You are listening to an edited version of the Session Zero and intro gameplay for the Dolmenwood campaign actual play we are producing using the old school Essentials game system. If you'd like to catch this game as we play it live, please check out our Twitch channel at twitch.tv/20sidestoeverystory, where you can view this live every other Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoy. Well, thank you, everybody. What a great way to start out the stream. Appreciate all the support y'all give to 20 Sides and allow us to do all the cool things that we get to do tabletop RPG related. And so today, I guess, is the kickoff of something I've been wanting to do for a while, something a little different. We play a lot of 5e on the channel. We dabble in other systems, other gaming systems now and again, but it's usually in a short one-shot kind of format. And so I've really been looking forward to digging into some old school D&D. So we're going to do that with old school essentials here. So my name's Alex. I'll be the game master for this campaign, and I am joined here by a number of the 20 Sides regulars. We've got Winston, Isaac, Maureen, Ryan, and Chris all joining me here. And so today what we're doing was we're just really doing a session zero. I guess a good place for us to start introductions about who we are and talk a little bit maybe about what we enjoy about tabletop games. This will give us kind of a sense of like what we're all looking to get out of this campaign. And so I guess the questions I have laid out here is just, you know, general introduction. Tell us maybe a little bit about your gaming background and tell us what you love about tabletop games. What are the things that you enjoy the most? And so I guess I'll start. And so my name's Alex. For those of you out there, I have been running 20 Sides now, created it about 5 years ago. I've been playing tabletop games probably, I mean, I've had some experiences when I was a child, apparently. Had a game or two with my father when I was really young, but then really didn't start playing D&D until it was third edition when I was in high school. I think people think that I've been playing D&D all my life, but I didn't start playing D&D until I was in grad school. The things that I really enjoy about tabletop games are, I think for me, it's like the role play. I like character development. So if I'm playing in a campaign, I like it when myself or others in the group create characters that are, I like flawed characters that sort of work through their problems or grow and develop in that way. And so that's one of the things I really enjoy. I enjoy the exploration side of the game. And so that's probably reflected a little bit in how I've set this one up, where I'm intentionally making you not natives of Dolmenwood so that it'll force a sense of like newness and discovery and wonder about it and such. So, yeah, so that's a little bit about me. We'll just go around. Why don't we go first here to Winston?
Sure, yeah. So I'm Winston, and I guess I'll, you know, give a bit of background on my gaming experience. I feel pretty comfortable. I'm probably the newest D&D person, tabletop person in the crew. I started playing, I want to say 3 years ago, but I think that's actually more like four maybe now. God, is it really? I don't even want to think about that. I feel like COVID has destroyed my ability of like relative time. But I started playing, and basically, like, you know, my background, you know, I've always been into like video games, that kind of thing. I always thought tabletop role-playing games were actually objectively stupid. Like, I was one of those guys. I was like, why does anyone do that when they can just play Final Fantasy and like see their guy on the screen? And so I didn't understand it. And like, I had a couple attempts and didn't really get it. And then I just started getting more curious about it. And I'll be honest, I was actually one of those guys who's like, I heard about Critical Role because of the computer game Pillars of Eternity 2. And I was like, what is this? People watch D&D on Twitch? That's ridiculous. And so I started watching and I was like, oh, it's about characters. It's about story. It's about telling a collaborative story. And I just got really interested. And I played a little with my kids, but really my first time truly, truly getting into it was on the channel. Alex let me play in a community campaign in the early days where when you could do anything you wanted, include like resurrect people with like good dice rolls or bad dice rolls. So we had some strange times in the first community game, but it was fun. And, you know, and I'm with Alex. Like, to me, the thing I like the most about tabletop role-playing games, so I mentioned it, I'm a character junkie. And like, what I mean by that is, like, every time I play a video game, every time I watch a movie or read a book, I get into it for the characters, their journey, their personality. Like, I'm the kind of guy, most of us probably are, that I'll sit on the character creation screen for like Dragon Age Origins and just like fantasize about my character and their background. And so it didn't really dawn on me until I started playing that that's what tabletop role-playing games can really be, is like these characters telling stories. So I really like that part a lot. To Alex's point, I like flawed characters. I think I have a slightly unearned reputation of always playing evil characters. I feel like sometimes do. But I enjoy characters that are like morally complicated. And I think it just is interesting. You know, and I think I like the soup that you get with all the other characters. So I love it when there's someone who's willing to be like the tried and true, truly good person, because then I can be like the gray person that kind of balances out, and that I enjoy that a lot. So, not to say that's going to happen with this character. I actually think, spoiler, my character's going to be a little more likable than usual. But sorry, I saw that game across the wrong way. But basically the idea is like, I really enjoy that aspect, and I like the wonder. I like the exploration. I like the not knowing what's going to happen. I do like adventures, but I really like when it's just whatever's going to come out of the DM's head is like whatever we are doing and kind of pulling on, we're kind of exploring. And then I will admit too, I like combat that's extremely scary. And I will say, like, I play with a lot of DMs. I haven't played much with Casey on the channel, and I play with a lot, and everyone's been really great. Awesome DMs on the channel, but I specifically really like how Alex DMs the community campaign, because he's willing to kill you. And I'm kind of hoping that the OSC, that there's going to be a little bit of that. Like, we probably will die. We may die. And that threat just really creates a lot of drama and some exciting, very memorable combats. And so anyways, that's kind of my take on it.
You're in the right place.
Yeah.
Awesome. Let's pass it on over to Isaac.
Hi, I'm Isaac. And yeah, definitely about that death situation. I've had a little experience with playing with Alex at a con. And it was like, I'm not going to, no spoilers, right? But maybe don't be the one to open the door. Like, well, I got, like you said, I could pretty much just kind of mirror and piggyback on what everyone's saying. Started now about 4 or 5 years. I know every time we do this, these introductions, it gets a little further back, right? it's crazy now. But yeah, started playing. And you know, now that I think about it, I was in an improv group and whatnot. That really, you know, drove me to like to play tabletop RPGs and whatnot. Just that like improvisation and whatnot really kind of, it's something that I really enjoy. Yeah, I would sit like I'm playing Skyrim or something, you know, you sit at the character screen and you're like, this is who they're going to be, you know? And you always wanted that. And then you play it and you could do so much. And in your head, you know, you're doing these mental gymnastics to get it so that they're doing this for some reason, but you never really got that like satisfaction of them actually doing it. Right. And playing D&D and any, you know, tabletop RPG really kind of gives you that kind of satisfaction. I definitely enjoy role playing. I really get into my character. I enjoy experiencing that character with others, you know, telling that collaborative story is always something I enjoy. Seeing how, like you were talking about, like that soup, right? How another character could really shape what your character does. You know, they have big impact, especially on a long like campaign. That's that slow burn. That's so beautiful where, if you had it like the party makeup, if it was something different, your character might have been something totally different. But just everyone kind of just, you know, just having these factors that really build what a character is. I really enjoy that. Being able to go back and see those milestones, you know, about how things change and how your character changed because of it. Combat. I enjoy combat. But I think I do enjoy like the RP aspect more. I'm really excited to explore, and I'm really excited. I don't know how far, how far we're going to get into it, but, you know, seeing how many torches I have, seeing if my water skin broke, stuff like that. I'm interested and I'm excited to do that. So I'm ready for the slow burn. That's where I'm at right now.
Yeah. That's an aspect of the game. Even when I played basic expert rules, I feel like too often we were tempted to just hand wave that. And it's such a big part of the game that I'm kind of looking forward to making sure that, we need to keep accurate records of these things, because that survival piece, it could really become a story if you don't have the thing that you need and you're out in the woods and, you know, what do? We're out of food. Now we gotta, there's all of that kind of stuff. There's a little bit of a newness to coming into OSE because it emphasizes some things that we don't do in 5e. So let's go over to Maureen.
Okay. Hi. I'm Maureen, Carvan, and, I have probably the longest time history, maybe, of people who've had starts and stops with D&D. I started my very first D&D experience in 1978-79. I was an undergrad. Almost done with my undergrad. I walked into this student-run game. I wanted to be an elf. I spent hours creating this elf character. She died on the second roll. And so that gives you an idea of how intense the old school essential game can be. I kind of got irritated after a while, and I'm putting this out there. It was difficult being a woman in the 70s, walking into that environment and actually trying to play this game. I was the only one. I lasted probably 3 months, and I finally gave up because the dungeon master at the time would be somebody that I would probably not want to socialize with. However, I loved the whole aspect of the role play. I read Tolkien when I was 12, and so for me that was, part of it. I'm introverted. I have a hard time when I meet people for the first time feeling actually socially comfortable. And so the role-playing aspect of the game really helps me to sort of relax into not only the character, but aspects of myself that I sometimes don't just let out into the world. As anybody who's gone out with me at any point in time in this group will know, I'm not nearly as calm and peaceful as I might seem. And so all those things come out in my character, my characters. I really put a lot of thought. The role-playing aspect of the game, as you can tell, is why I continue to do it. Every single campaign has its own taste, flavor. It's like all these different deep relationships and experiences that become true lifelong relationships. I do and don't like combat. I'm a very strategic person. And so I try to bring that into combat. That's not necessarily the best thing to do in D&D, actually. I have to remind myself, run. And I get very upset if something that I do kills somebody. I'm much less worried about killing myself than I am about killing somebody else. And I have been known to burst into real tears, to actually feel like go around for days being depressed because of something that happened, or being elated because of something that happened in game. So I really, really get it deeply into it.
Awesome. Thanks, Maureen. And I think you've got some people in the chat that are clapping back at the idea of, yes, it was difficult back once upon a time. Probably still is in certain gaming contexts too, but hopefully the environment's changed a bit, being more inclusive and welcoming and such. So let's move next over to, let's go over to Ryan next.
Hey guys, I'm Ryan Garthok, and Yeah, this is kind of cool. Like just hearing everybody's kind of stories and why they're into D&D and stuff. It's like, it's just another reason to love you guys even more. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, oh, I feel so the same way as all these people that I've grown to enjoy playing with. Yeah, I mean, D&D scratches so many itches for me. One is like the creative problem solving thing, like group problem solving. Navigating groups, human relationships, all that fun stuff, you know, getting to do it in like this fantasy fun time context instead of like at work or with like actual like important things and things in your life. It's like, oh, wow, I can all these things I have to do in real life that are frustrating. I can do in this fantasy world. And it's actually fun. Wow. You know, I think another thing is like, you know, in my life, in my real life or whatever outside of D&D, you know, I'm like a musician. And one of the things that I like about the D&D thing is that very much when it's going well and the way it's gone with a lot of the people in this gaming group, it really feels like a jam. It really feels like a jam session. You get in this flow state. Everybody's playing off each other. Everybody's playing their characters. And yeah, it's just, it's like playing in a band. You get that jam going and there's nothing like it, you know? So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to kind of getting into that flow state and jamming with all of you guys again, you know, here.
I like that analogy. I think that's a really good way of putting it. Well, thanks, Ryan. Let's go over to Chris.
Hello, everyone. My name is Christopher Johnson. So you started playing Dungeons and Dragons. I 3 weeks ago celebrated my 50th birthday, and I began when I was 11. So 39 years, sixth grade. Had the situation where, you know, I mean, at that time, you had the stigma of the game. So, you know, you'd go look at the books in the back of Walden Books and make sure that nobody from school was looking at you and stuff like that. So you'd hide back there and pilfer through the books. But the first game I ever played with a friend of mine, it was Tunnels and Trolls. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of that, but that was actually my first RPG experience, and switched to, got my red box at the Half Price store, 1983, and pretty much played every iteration. I didn't really play too much in not a lot of third edition. It was mainly red box, blue box, then of course, you know, advanced Dungeons and Dragons and stuff like that. But and then I played a little bit of fourth and then kind of got back in fifth. But it's been interesting with, because I pretty much was strictly in person, but you know, COVID situation and all that, it was really kind of the first time I ever did any online gaming. And I think it's probably, I found 20 Sides, I believe it was on YouTube when I had kind of Googled Temple of Elemental Evil and saw that you guys were in the midst of your community play. And I was like, maybe I'll go out and check that out, and signed up and was very much welcomed by everybody, and it was a absolute ball. As far as D&D, I mean, I like the character development, character creation. I mean, the kind of play that I guess that I'm used to with one of my longstanding in-person DMs, when we would do character creation, I mean, it would be like a 10-hour situation with you and the DM where you would literally figure out all of your backstory, list of contacts, that just, you know, the world immersive, where you kind of just got the sense where, you know, you knew what was down the street and all this kind of stuff, that it really allowed you to get into the game. But I always like the lower level play because there is the sense of danger, you know, once you get up to 18th level. I mean, what's going to hurt you other than, you know, numerous dragons or gods and
yeah,
stuff
come
like
at me
that.
God,
so, that's right. I really haven't, it's somewhat new, I guess, to me to not delve into the minutiae of what you have on you and stuff like that. you know, what your party is carrying on the cart and everything. One of the, you know, the DM that I play with, he's like, I need to know what you have, so when the looters come, they know what to take and put you in dire straits. So I'm used to actually being like the quartermaster. So, you know, depending on how much minutia we get into this, if anybody doesn't want to keep track of party stuff, that, I mean, I don't want to say do that for a living, but pretty much that tends to be my role in many of the games that I play in, because I'm kind of a spreadsheet dork and everything. I've got all kinds of stuff that I've got set up for weights and all kinds of stuff. So
once the party inevitably buys a donkey in a cart, we know who's tracking what's on the cart.
That's right.
Yeah. I'm nominating you for our quartermaster.
You're the quartermaster.
That yep. is
you got it.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. And probably a little bit off topic, but just something I was kind of thinking about as you were talking. You'd mentioned you found 20 sides because of the Temple of Elemental Evil. And it just sort of makes me think how special that module is, in that I think people that played it or were familiar with it from back in the day often will cite it as one of their favorites. And I'd never played it. I played a lot of old school modules, like Keep on the Borderlands has a place in my childhood nostalgia, and Lost City and some of these others, but that one I never did. And so when we had the opportunity to run it, I don't know if I had really understood the reverence for the source material. And then when all these people like yourself, Ryan, I think you joined because of Temple, Gabe, joined, like all these people joined 20 Sides because of love of that module. And it sort of makes me feel like some of us that weren't familiar with it kind of got to have like this reverse kind of going back in time kind of experience, where we got to like kind of capture a nostalgia for something that was antiquated, but it was now in 5e. And so it was very, very special thing that we were able to participate in and do, kind of thanks to Goodman Games for letting us do that and stream that content. So that's who we are, and we're gonna get started. Something I'd like to start doing, maybe it's not just in this game, maybe it would be something to do in other 20 Sides games, but it's something that I was introduced to by playing with Pete Petrucia from Imagining Games, who has been on the channel to plug some of the cool Kickstarters and games that he designs. But he does this thing at the end of his like tabletop games called Gratitude, where everybody, you just kind of like slow down. Because usually when we stop our games, we kind of just stop. We say, okay, that's it. Goodbye. And I think it'd be cool, especially in this being more maybe a relaxed game, for us to kind of slow down like the stopping point and maybe take a moment to maybe decompress, chat about the session a little bit, but then just take a moment for each of us to kind of go around and like express to somebody in the group, like, this is, I'm thankful for you for, like, this is how you made this session like awesome. And like, I really appreciated when you did that cool thing, or you included my character in the plan that you were concocting, or whatever the case might be.
We'll have to set up some kind of Beastie Boys gratitude trigger in the chat. Got it. And that's right. All right.
All right. Isaac, draft the email then to the Beastie Boys, please, it. So we can get that.
Gotcha. Let me get back into my Outlook.
So, all right, let's talk a little bit about some maybe table expectations kinds of things. I don't know if that's really the right word. Maybe it's more like rules. And so I will be very clear with you all that at once upon a time, I did run Basic Expert as sort of my preferred rule set, but that was like 6 years ago. So I am extremely rusty on these rules. I haven't really played Old School Essentials outside of one game that me and Isaac played at Game Hole Con last year. I guess I'm just saying this to be like, you're going to have to be patient with me as I'm fiddling through PDFs, and I've tried to get I'm not really a super organized person. And so I set up like a OneNote to try to get myself some semblance of structure and control, but we'll see how it goes. But the other thing I'm going to say is I don't want to be fiddling around with trying to get the exact ruling on things right necessarily in the middle of a session. So I'm going to be calling a lot of audibles, and I'll probably totally screw up multiple times, but I'm putting this out there to say, like, I might call an audible in the session, but I will do everything after the session to, like, review what was my calling, and I'll make a process for whatever the thing was so that it's consistent throughout going forward. A few of the homebrew rules that we will be using that are not printed necessarily in the Old School Essentials rulebook. There's like a two-weapon fighting thing in the book, but we're going to scrap that and say if you're two-weapon fighting, you can do that if your class has a strength or dex as a prime requisite. You can fight with you can attack with two weapons. The offhand weapon that you have has to have the light trait. And what this is going to do, we're going to throw a 5e mechanic in here that allows you to make your attack at advantage. So you roll the 2d20s, you'll take the higher result. Otherwise, we're dealing with, okay, you get to make two attacks, and the first one has a -4, and the other one has a -2. Like, let's get rid of that. Let's just make it one attack. It's at advantage. It gives you a higher chance to hit, and you're forfeiting, you know, like a shield, basically. Which brings us to talking about shields. In the book, a shield grants a +1 bonus. We're upping that. A shield will give you a +2 bonus. And then the other thing about shields that we're going to use is that if you are ever hit by an attack, and that attack's damage would reduce you to 0, or it doesn't have to be reduced to 0, just like, oh, it's 8 hit points coming my way. I don't really want to take 8 hit points of damage right now. You can forfeit the shield. You can allow the blow to be absorbed completely by the shield. The shield is then destroyed, but you don't take any damage. In the case that you have a shield that has a magical bonus, you can do the same mechanic up to the number of times of the bonus. So like if it's a +1 shield, the shield won't be destroyed. It's just you get to use that thing once. If it's got a +2 bonus, you could do that 2 times per day. The other thing, so the goal of all this is because, yeah, OSC by default can be extremely lethal and extremely deadly. And in the interest of, we want to have something of some character development. You have to survive a number of sessions for that to happen, right? We're trying to include some rules that might give you a better chance of getting out of a sticky situation if it should happen. So the other thing that we're going to be doing is, by default, OSC rules, if you drop to 0 hit points, you're dead. There's no saving throws. There's no resuscitating anybody, nothing like that. So we're going to be using these death and dismemberment rules that I found, where dropping to 0 doesn't necessarily mean instant death, but it might add some complexity to, you might have some lingering injuries, you might have a permanent injury of some sort. And so we'll play around with that, see how we like it, and if at some point we decide it's too much and we don't like it, we could scrap it and find something else. And the other change at the start that I'm going to be making is that all classes can use all weapons, with the exceptions being that the friar and cleric still can only use blunt weapons, and the knight can still only use melee weapons. I don't like the idea that the wizard has to sit there with a dagger only. I feel like a wizard should be able to use a longsword, and that'd be fine, so we can have our Gandalf wizard, you know, using his enchanted sword or whatever if he's in a tight spot. We are going to use the simplified version of encumbrance, so I'm not going to ask you to calculate the weight of, like, all of your equipment. We're basically going to assume that your equipment is what it is, and then we're going to define your movement speed based on your armor. So whatever armor you're wearing kind of is where, you know, if you're not wearing any armor, your base movement speed is 120 or whatever. And then if you're carrying treasure, though, treasure we will track. So in Old School Essentials, we don't track things by pounds. It's like you track things by coin. How many coins does it weigh? And so each character can carry up to 1,600 coins worth of treasure. That isn't necessarily literally coins. It could be, we've got this big portrait that we're lugging around, and the portrait is the equivalent to 500 coins. Does that make sense? It's a strange accounting method, but that's what it is.
Is that how experience works too? I forgot to ask about that.
Yes, and we'll get to that, and that'll probably be our next topic. But the other thing I wanted to say about treasure is that while I'm not tracking like the encumbrance of your equipment and everything, if you do want to carry a mass amount of coins, like you just killed the dragon and you're going to the dragon's, you're going to try to pull the hoard out, I'm going to ask that you have to have the containers to do so. So like you have, you know, if you have a sack that can fit 50 coins, that's how much of the dragon's hoard you can take out. That's where it may, that's where our donkey and cart probably comes into play at some point, is that you find all this stuff and okay, we have to figure out a way to ferry it where we need to. Yes. So experience and leveling, how does that work in OSC? So the game design of OSC in old school D&D sort of assumes that you're out for treasure and that you're looking for treasure. And so that is how you level up primarily. Every gold piece that you find in the world, now, it's not that you found it, it's that you found it and brought it back to a safe place or a town, or you secured it, right? Whenever
we eat it immediately, can we just like eat the coins and gain power?
Yeah, we know, never, like, we don't get to level up.
These are chocolate coins. No, yeah, every experience point or every coin equates to an experience point that is then divided five ways amongst the five of you. Unless, you know, if you've got hirelings and such, it could be divided further. But so that is a big way that experience points come. You know, killing monsters and such does give you experience points, but a lot of times it's maybe not worth the risk of fighting that den of goblins. Maybe. It sort of depends. Do they have treasure is probably the bigger point. I'm going to add in here, though, like, I will give you pots of EXP for doing cool things or taking on quests. Like, if you take on a quest for somebody and you complete it, I will factor in an amount of experience that's probably anywhere from 1/20th of a level's worth of experience points to 1/10th of a level of experience points. It just sort of depends. But some kind of a bonus for doing a thing, in addition to all the treasure and whatnot that you would have found along the way of completing the quest. If you all as a group decide we want to spell out a group goal that we're working towards. So for example, we've heard a rumor about this monster in the woods and we want to go and track it down, find it and slay it. And it's like something that takes you, you know, a number of sessions to complete. I'll probably give you a bonus to experience points for naming the goal and completing it. So it could be a self-motivated thing amongst your group.
What if the goal is to gain experience points?
An infinite loop of...
That's Bringo.
Yep. Bringo. You broke OSC. Reboot.
Look out, small towns of commoners. Lay waste. Lay waste to the outs.
You all were worried outskirts. About the wrong thing this entire time. Which maybe that brings us to campaign tone. So, I guess a little bit of context of where I'm coming from as a GM, DM, whatever. So the last campaign that I ran was Wild Beyond the Witchlight, which was a lot of fun. And I think we told a really good story and it was very lighthearted at times, extremely silly, but you know, it was sort of that type of game where I had a lot of comical characters and whatnot. And now my desire is to swing and do something that's sort of like the opposite. Like I need some contrast from where I just was. And so I'm hoping I would like to play this one out with at least a semi-serious tone where like your characters are all multidimensional and they're not maybe caricatures of something. Like they're developing and they're real life. They're real people that have goals and are trying to go somewhere, which really means putting you all in the driver's seat for crafting whatever that narrative is. My hope is that this campaign would be something where we've got some degree of politics in play with the different factions in the Dolmenwood. It has an element of high fantasy, some drama, kind of that grit of survival. Not to say that there won't be some like silly fun here and there. I mean, we've got cat people that exist in the world, and the wood grooves, right? Like there are some creatures that have sort of a little bit of whimsy to them, but I don't want to play them necessarily as I think you kind of get what I'm saying a little bit.
That works for me a lot because, like you, I'd like gritty experience that's nuanced.
Yeah, I like having fun a lot, obviously. And I will say, like, in one-shots and in even the community campaign, it's fun having kind of, like, sillier-type characters. I really enjoy that style of play, and I like that D&D or tabletop role-playing games is, like, a nice format for that. But I think for this, I was kind of thinking the same thing, Alex, where it's like, it'd be nice because it's going to be deadly, I'm assuming, and because we're not, like, superheroes like you would in, like, a 5e setting, we're going to be, like, I have one spell and that's it, you know? And I think it'll be kind of nice to have the tone sort of be like mysterious and sort of weighty and creepy and maybe scary a little without, you know? And so then I think to that, like, I think we have to have fun with it, but I think that striking that balance of like not making too many, not making too many one note characters, that kind of thing, mm-hmm. which I will say this, I've played with everyone in this group and I have no worries about that. So, mm-hmm. but yeah, I think it's worth stating.
Yeah. Just not undercutting. Yeah. If there's weight to the situation, not undercutting it by just your character, like not giving a shit when they would,
yeah,
you know, they would, you know, if there's this thing that's there, that's going to harm them. Like you definitely, you know, react the way that they would react, you know, don't be the action hero, you know, like make it a little, it helps with the immersion, right? Like that's kind of what we want, right? So,
and don't play a Kermit the Frog.
Yeah. Or like Adam Sandler or Adam something.
I don't know.
You took the words Adam right Sandler out of my mouth.
Be appropriate.
Yeah. I think
settings. Did I just say that? I didn't mean that. I might. Yeah. Well, so you haven't heard my voice yet. So
that's right.
It's like the difference between, like, say, you know, the 60s Batman series and Christopher Nolan's Batman, right? It's the same content. It's the same goofy characters, same goofy villains, but it's how you're kind of attacking it, right? And I think that the setting, reading a little bit of the Dolman Wood stuff from some Humble Bundles and stuff, it, that kind of fey, that high fantasy fey world really lends itself to that thing. Sort of presents itself as kind of whimsical, but it's actually like vicious and deadly. So I think that there's, because of the high fantasy kind of aspect, there is sort of a whimsy to it, but I think it's more of like, you have to think of it more of like Pan's Labyrinth than you know, something more lighthearted, you know?
Yeah. Well, as I've been preparing for this, you know, a lot of times in the 20 Sides Discord, we'll just be hanging out and chit-chatting in our General 2 channel. And I'm sure that, you know, as I'm reading, people have heard or could see I'm, like, concentrating on something and I'm, like, focused on it because I'm like, oh, wow. And then I'll give out, like, a little giggle because I'll be like, this hex, oh, that's funny. That would be so funny if that were to happen and this situation would happen. And then I keep reading and then I'm like, oh.
Oh.
That's not so funny. That's not so cute. So there's a lot of that. Like, it's kind of like, yeah, maybe if something is too cute, you should be like, run away.
Well, it would be frightening. Like, this is obviously a trap, you know, Baby Yoda. That can't be good.
That can't be good. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. I just got out of a Curse of Strahd campaign. And I mean, it was a little bit more, you know, out there, but definitely, yes, I'm looking forward to things that aren't as they appear.
Yeah, if we see cute animals having a tea party, nuke them.
Yep.
I'm gonna color definitely spray and run.
Don't eat the food.
So another thing that I just thought about as we were talking about this character death. So obviously, very real possibility, right? I guess my question here is, how do we want to handle that? Because there's so many different ways that we can handle a character dying, particularly when it's like in the midst of maybe a dungeon crawl, or it's, you know, how do we reincorporate that player? I've got a number of thoughts. I got a number of ideas, but I guess I want to first pass it to you guys to see what you all think.
I mean, you know, I'm a fan of getting the player back in as soon as possible. So, you know, I don't, not in a way it's like someone opened the door in the dungeon. They're like, oh, hi, you know, like there could be some delay. I think that makes it weighty. I think if it I guess I'll put it this way. I think if a player gets killed in a really like big emotional moment, we don't want a Grimalkin to like descend from the ceiling and be like, hello. I think there could be some weight to it. I will say like you killed me in a one shot recently and then you just sort of like logically placed my character in the dungeon and I hung out for like 30 minutes. That was perfect for me. I would love for that to be like the way it's handled. But if it's like my character we've been playing for like 6 months that gets killed, then maybe it's like, hey, I'm just going to watch the rest of the session and then maybe come back next time. You know, I think there can be a scale. Maybe we can feel it out at the moment.
Yeah.
What I would say, I hadn't commented on the thing that you had said previously. I don't know if you've noticed this. I tend to not be too silly of a character when I play characters. So I don't have a problem, you know, having it be a little more of a serious game. It's more of my preference of play style. But as a player, I wouldn't have a problem to maintain story to sit out half a session and even another session. I could still even show up and not be somebody. You could say, hey, be this NPC or something like that. You know, I mean, assign me an NPC, you know, some townsfolk or whatever. You know, I mean, just kind of incorporate me, the player, into the thing rather than me bringing a player in until it fits story purpose. Because, yeah, I mean, the you open the door in the dungeon and it's like, hi, you know, I mean, I'm your new fourth level fighter. Hello, you know, that... To me, that doesn't, that it works against story than working towards it. Because why would anybody trust that new fourth level fighter?
You know? PC idea too, to say if we have some hirelings or something here, to say, okay, you control them for a bit or until such a time, yeah, that another character would come in or something. That sounds kind of good.
It sounds like you all are pretty flexible on what that is. Like we can kind of, like if it's fine, I could even just stop play and we can like talk about how do we want this next part to go? Like, do you want, you know, adventurer to be, you know, 30 minutes out somewhere in this dungeon, right? Like there might be a situation where it's possible that there's another explorer out somewhere and they get incorporated, or we could even have maybe the character still sticks around for the rest of the session as a ghost and can kind of interact with things in like kind of their own little world, like seeing, you know what I mean? Like probably not hanging out like a forest ghost right next to you talking to you, but like allow them to maybe do something sort of in isolation. It's kind of like those last moments of sticking around the material plane. Like,
I like that.
Just to extend the traumatic experience.
Yeah. Well, yes, that's a huge part of it.
I think that adds to kind of the collaborative vein we're kind of trying to do with this campaign too, with kind of saying, where do you want to take this and where's the next session to go? What hex are we headed to next? I think that kind of stays in the spirit of that too, where we can say, okay, somebody passed away. Now, this is probably pretty heavy for the group. Like, let's talk about this. What do we want to happen? Where do we want this to go? I think that's a great way to handle it.
And I would think, given some of the characters that we have in the group and this religion of the one true God, like it might even become sort of an important thing, a quest, right? Like to put this person to rest, like properly, like, and not hand wave it as, okay, we dug this hole over here because it was convenient. And then we did a little prayer and now it's good. Like we're done, you know, like
just kill me in the hole.
Yep.
Does this body count as treasure?
You all gain 1,000 coins.
Dig through pockets and find your little will.
So that brings us to, like, I'm going to introduce some stuff about the campaign, and then I'm going to bring us into play. So our campaign, your characters, the five characters here, are starting out prisoners. You all live within, I would say, a political context that is very uncertain right now. And so you've all grown up and lived under the reign of the Lumoran Empire, which is pretty much dominates the continent of Isan, that where you live, and has been that way for centuries. Has been the unifying political force of the realm. And it is very much an empire that is has a symbiotic relationship with the church. Both the religion and the politics reinforce and affirm the other's legitimacy. The Lumoran Empire names the Diacleretic Church, or which gets its name from the mountain where the holy texts of the church come from. Now, many people just refer to the church as the Cleretic Church. It's a monotheistic religion with a god that is a kind of Old Testament, vengeful. I mean, we've just been playing Temple of Elemental Evil, pretty similar to the St. Cuthbert, like kind of righteous, smite evil, but also has a side of it that is about kind of affirming compassion in humanity and such. So the church is sanctioned by the Empire, and in return, the church kind of puts its stamp of approval on their ability to rule and gives the emperor kind of that is the chosen family, the chosen line of the one true God to carry humanity forward. But in recent times, the Lumoran Empire has fallen into a state of chaos a bit, as the current emperor does not have an heir. And so the bloodline lies with four of his nephews. And a number of years ago, maybe about a decade or so before our campaign starts, the emperor had a stroke and fallen into a coma. And so there was a period of time where these four nephews were carving out their pieces of the empire where their influences, and they went to war with one another. And so this is really, it fractured the national identity of the empire. And so people in different communities, different cities, different nobles threw in their lot with one of these four brothers, and it has caused turmoil throughout the empire. And things haven't really gotten better since the emperor awoke maybe 7 years ago. Enough damage had been done during that period of time where this war happened that it never really healed. And in that time, there have been strange things that have happened, and pretty much everywhere throughout the empire is kind of going through different stages of almost like police state kind of mentality. And that could explain some of the crackdown that has happened to the five of you. Even if you did do crimes of some sort, the penalty of being thrown in prison and potentially shipped off to a labor camp might not be in prior times, your crimes may not have lived up to that type of penalty. And so people are being like taken off the street for really no reason. The church is getting involved in things that it normally wouldn't have, because another aspect of this civil war that happened was some of these nephews were showing signs that they were putting their lot in, they might change like the official religion of the empire. And so the Cleretic Church is uneasy as well in making some strange moves and calling for crusades into foreign lands and such. And so all of this to say, the point here is where you're coming from is very chaotic and has sort of this Game of Thrones. You're really not sure who's going to come out on top, and everybody is acting in dramatic manners, those political actors and the nobility. So where we're starting, though, your characters have been caught up incidentally in some of this chaos and been landed in prison. Not to the point that you've been shipped off to a workers' camp, but that would be your ultimate fate if you were to stay in prison for too long. You'd be shipped off to a coal mine or an iron mine somewhere to produce free labor for the empire and continue its work to try to remain the sole legitimate political power within the continent. But your characters, and we'll get to it, we'll explain how your characters know this figure, but your characters through imprisonment came to have a relationship, or at least earn the trust of a former knight who's also a prisoner. And his name is Sir Silas de Santos, although the sir, I guess, is dropped. He will correct you if you ever try to refer to him as sir. He will remind you that he has lost that honor. But he's an older gentleman. He's probably in his mid-60s or so. He still seems quite healthy. He's able to kind of hustle and work in the small jobs that he's had within the prison. But somehow, one way or another, you all earned his trust. And As fate would have it, he has come upon and been offered by the crown a opportunity for amnesty to clear his name and earn his freedom back. There's another interest group within the empire, and that would be the Imperial Order of Magists, which is a kind of a formal collection of wizards and scholars who are sanctioned by the empire to conduct research and learn more about the arcane arts. Sort of the cleric church, not super excited about this turn of events that happened during a period of enlightenment some hundreds of years ago, but the emperor at that time was keenly interested in learning more about the arcane arts, and the church, in an effort to not be sidelined or have their power diminished, kind of worked out a compromise where they would put their stamp of approval on the Order of Magists if they could have some stipulations about what types of magic were allowed, and to get a pledge from the Emperor that this order, their mission statement, their whole reason for existence was to learn about the arcane arts to do good and do right by the church and by the God. And so that is what their deal is. So anyway, the Imperial Order of Magists came to the prison and they found Sir DeSantos, who has a reputation and connections, whatever the case might be, but they had a mission for him. And it would seem that one of their members has gone missing and has apparently stolen some secrets or done something. The ask from the Imperial Order is a little bit absent of some details. They're not really willing to share what this person did or what they stole, but what they do share is her name and where they believe that she has ran off to. And so the person that is being sought, they call her a prismist, meaning that she studies magical gemstones and kind of the connection between the earth and ley lines and arcane energies. And so her name is Marjoram Griver, and she was rank of second order within the Imperial Magists. And the only thing that they are willing to share really is that she stole a crystal that is the property of the order, and they believe that she has fled the capital city and has gone out to the remote region of the empire called Dolmenwood. So the crown extended this offer to Sir Silas that he is to either kill her and return the gemstone, or they will provide a bigger reward if she is able to be captured alive and brought back. And with this, would receive exoneration for his crimes and be free once more. Sir Silas, due to the connection that you all have with him, insisted that the five of you accompany him on this mission, that he cannot do it alone as a mere knight. He would need a crew to be able to have the power to deal with a wizard. And so he put his neck out, he put his deal in jeopardy in order to ensure that the five of you would go along with him. And the Magists and the Crown accepted that offer with the caveat that he is sort of your custodian. And so you're being allowed to go along with him. You five are his wards, I guess. Like, if one of you steps out, he's equally guilty and responsible for what your actions are. And so there's a little bit of a power dynamic between you and him in that regard. He's the one that's carrying your coin and has the power of the purse. He's the one that has arranged a lot of the logistics and such. And so you have been traveling with him now for some time. You have your gear that you purchased and whatnot, but any coinage that you have, he's hanging on to it.
Dolmenwood is part of the empire. Is it one of the areas that was carved out by one of the nephews?
It is not. So okay. Its relationship, you could almost think of it kind of like it's more of a vassal state than a part of the empire proper, just because it's so remote. It would be difficult for any standing army to get there just because it's so far away. And it's sort of geographically located in a place that would be difficult to move in and out of. And it's so far removed that it's just strategically not in a place that matters to the empire much. Its relationship to the empire seems to be, from what your understanding is it exports lumber and some kind of luxury goods like alcohols and particularly, there are some spirits from a village called Prigmort that you've heard of. And so those seem to be the things that primarily lumber is its main export. And as long as that continues to flow and come down the river and eventually make its way to the Empire, nobody bats an eye or really cares what their affairs are up there. The legal authority, as far as you know or understand, in Dolmenwood is the Duchy of Brackenwold. And so the Duke of Brackenwold is a part of the nobility structure of the Empire, but his name doesn't really get referenced much because his influence doesn't extend beyond the Dolmenwood.
I would imagine the gemstone that Majorim took, that we have a full a briefing on what it looks like, all that type of stuff, so we fully kind of know what we're looking for type of deal.
Yeah, what they describe to you isn't necessarily all that notable. Like they tell you it's like this violet, kind of elongated, gemstone. They give you the rough description of size and whatnot, but nothing about why is it important that they get it back. They'll tell you you're not allowed to know that. You don't need to know it. What you need to know is what she looks like. She's an older woman, late 50s.
And we can assume she's a somewhat powerful magist.
They would tell you that much of her study was primarily academic, when it comes down to, was she a war mage or anything like that? No. She primarily was someone that studied things and did a lot of scholarly research, but wasn't somebody that was out in the field. So she'd probably be slippery in terms of she has some spellcasting ability, and she, if you're not careful, maybe could put a charm on you or something like that. But they give you kind of a rundown of her talents in that way.
And do we have all of our other equipment at the moment, like weapons and...
Yes. Gear. Yep. Yep. They did anything that you kind of came into prison with, they relinquished to you after the fact. Although for you and your spell book has definitely been poured over, and there is a arcane mark on the pages of your spell book, and it is the symbol of the Claritic Church, which is known as the oracular. And so it has been pressed into each of those pages. And so you know that is sort of the expectation. If you were ever to add a new spell to your spell book, you are supposed to take it to a member of the Claritic Church to get it approved.
They forced it on me. Okay.
It's a problem.
Do I have my gem?
You have your quartz. Yep. Mm-hmm. I would say it's unclear to you how much those rules of the Empire extend into Dolmenwood. So you don't know. Is that an expectation? But in the Empire, if you were to be caught with your spell book and not have it be sanctioned like that, you'd be right back in the same situation that you were. It's cause for imprisonment, or if they believe that it's not just that you were unlicensed, but you were actually actively doing something treasonous, it could be execution. But yeah, the five of you plus Sir Silas, you have three canoes that he, that's how you're getting, you're going up the river, and you're kind of going against the flow of the river. And so the days are long and laborious. At the end of the day, you're ready to pull your canoes off to the side and get a good night's rest and whatnot. That is where we're going to kind of begin. You've been traveling all day along this river. The terrain that you've been traversing through at this point has been pretty flat, maybe at times kind of rolling hills, and you've probably been stopping from time to time. There's a lot of subsistence farmers out in this area, and so folk are relatively friendly. You're with somebody, and you would note that Sir Silas, he wields a sword that is very unique. It has a dark, it's a long sword, but it has sort of a dark blade, a dark iron that's kind of ringed with veins of sort of an azure silvery color. And this is a blade that marks him as a member of the nobility. Actually, Ryan, your character would have a sword like this too. It is the symbol of one that is a knight within the structure of the Empire. It is a special metal that there's only one mine within the Empire that this ore comes from, and so it gives you status carrying it. And so you've been stopping from time to time to get some food, get some provisions from some of the common folk, and because of that status, you're treated quite well, even though they don't know that you no longer carry your titles of lordship any longer. But you're getting to the point as you're traveling where you can see now up ahead, maybe a few miles ahead, the tree line of the Dolmenwood Forest. You know what we have to do? We have a couple of rolls that we need to make from the get-go, because we need to figure out what month, day, and season it is as we start the campaign. So, why don't we have... Chris, would you roll me a
d12? That is a 6.
So, we are in the month of Yggwild, which is the month of the fading of spring. So, it sounds like we are coming out of spring, moving into the summer months. 23rd day of the month. So there you go. That means that it is fairly pleasant yet in terms of the temperature. Do a quick roll to see the weather on this day. Okay. Let's see. Isaac, why don't you roll me a 2d6?
Got it. Do you want them...
edit together.
5 total.
So, yeah, it is a brisk, clear day. There's not a cloud in the sky. And so given that you've been all day kind of using the oars to make progress up the river, having a little bit of a cool temperature is somewhat welcome. Yeah, you're starting to put yourselves, you're pulling the canoes off to the side. It's been a full day of travel. And Sir Silas suggests that no point in struggling on only to put camp directly into the forest. It may be best to camp here on the outskirts and call it a day and start fresh in the morning as you would progress into the Dolmenwood. A few things that we'll just take care of. I just want to kind of show you basically what the camp procedure is when you're out in the wilderness. Basically, what you need to do in order to have a full decent rest is you need to be able to have a fire going. You would want to have something in your belly. And there are some other things that you could do to help. Because basically resting is a roll to see if you had a good rest or not. So at the end of all of the activities that you do to prepare your camp, we would do a check and you get bonuses based on some of the pieces. So, one of the things that needs to happen is fetching firewood. Any number of characters could engage in fetching firewood. Depending on weather conditions, it may be more difficult to find usable firewood. Like, for example, if it had just rained, it's going to be hard to find wood that is going to be able to sustain a fire for any number of hours. And so that is a piece that can happen. Building the fire is also dependent on the conditions of the moment. So today is a clear day. There's no inclement weather. And so starting the fire be basically automatic. But if there was bad conditions, a high wind or such, there would have to be a roll that would happen. We are going to assume on this day that you have gathered up some food from some of the farmers and such in the area. But if this had been like a fresh day, you may have been like foraging and such throughout the day. I mean, foraging is something that you can do automatically just as you're traveling. Something like fishing, you would have to use a whole day stopped in one place to do anything that would be substantial. Same thing with hunting. If you decide you want to hunt, you're going to have at least the person that wants to do the hunting kind of stays in the same hex doing that activity for the day. And you might have your other folks kind of exploring around while they're doing that and gathering the food, but that's kind of how that works. If anyone is wanting, you can also cook any of the food that you collect. And so someone, the cook, can do a wisdom check to attempt to make a meal that might give you a bonus on your sleep check. And the other piece, fetching water is pretty much almost always going to be automatic in Dolmenwood. It's a forest. Particularly today, you're sitting on a river, so there's like absolutely no check that really has to be happen. You got water skins and such, automatically fill them up, and you've got cooking water and everything like that. The other check that can happen on a rest is what is called a camaraderie check. And so what this is the time that you spend around the fire telling stories, entertaining one another, and you can attempt to do a charisma check to do that, whether it's with a tale, music, song, your stand-up routine, whatever it is, that can also give you a little bit of a bonus on the sleep check. So, who here is going to be out fetching firewood this evening?
I would go out and fetch the firewood. It'll give me a chance to familiarize myself a little bit more with this wood.
If you wish assistance, I'd...
Oh, you're welcome to come along. Shout out if you get lost.
Do we have anyone that's volunteering to maybe cook a bit this evening?
My character wouldn't. He'll cook.
Briar Fitzpatrick will be manning the stove. Sir Silas will be just sort of in general kind of setting up the camp, laying out the bedrolls and getting tents set up and whatnot.
I guess Sir Joffrey, trying to probably avoid his brother a little bit, will be in the camp, but sort of walking the perimeter, trying to set up some kind of perimeter on the camp and just kind of get the lay of the land, breathe some fresh air after being in prison.
Okay.
For so long, you know.
Yeah, and I think Wayman, I know there's no mechanic for this, but I think Wayman would be hanging out with the friar and just sort of like talking to him. And he's talking to him somewhat jovially. There's no acidic sort of anti-church thing happening, but he's just kind of like talking about his time in prison. And then I think I would like to contribute to the camaraderie role of telling a campfire story when everyone gets back about the legend of the Nag Lord.
That sounds good. Let's start with those of you that are fetching firewood. Each of you can roll me a D6, and that's how many hours of firewood that you're able to collect.
Two for me.
Two? Okay.
Three for me.
Okay. Do we just have the two people on firewood? I thought there was a third person.
No, nope. That's right.
Nope. Okay. So you got about 5 hours of firewood. I don't know. But you're not in a... Because it's not winter, let's see. There is a check involved. Okay. Okay, so you bring back what you were able to find out in the wilderness. We also had Sir Jeff Joffrey. You were sort of walking the perimeter of the camp and such. The sun is starting to set in the sense that, you know, the sky is sort of this orangish color, and it's starting to turn to kind of a dim light out. Why don't you roll me a D6 real quick?
Two.
Two? Okay. As you're doing that, you feel like for a second you saw on the perimeter, the terrain here is relatively flat. Like you're not in the forest yet, but there is there's some hedges and some bushes and kind of isolated trees throughout. You saw some animal, like a small animal, but maybe about the size of like a rabbit or a squirrel or something, jump into that bush. And you felt like it did so because like it was like staring at you and it reacted to you like looking at it, and it was peculiar the way that it reacted.
Yeah, I would say if I thought it was a bit peculiar, I would probably take a walk up to the bush just to take a look. You know, do the old grab a stick, poke at it. You know, if it was a behavior I wouldn't, you know, that struck me as funny, I would probably go take a peek.
You go and take a look, and this particular bush that you're looking at has these tiny blue berries that are hanging off of it, and you're trying to, like, look, you know, within and just see, because you didn't see the creature leave the bush. And so the thing is, like, with an animal creature like that, you would have expected it maybe to run off, climb up a tree, like, try to get away from you, but it almost seems like it's hiding. And as you're looking in, you feel like you can see these eyes, like, kind of spectral eyes staring out at you.
Okay, yeah, so I want to say this probably startles me quite a bit, and I'm probably like, stepping back, and I would immediately address Sir Silas, who I would consider the leader of the camp, and say, hey, something's going on over here. There's these glowing eyes. I saw this weird rabbit jump in this thing. There, I went to check it out, glowing eyes. This is a bad omen or something.
Sir Silas looks at you with his aged eyes, and he just says, step away. We are very close to the Dolmen Wood. There are many, many things, many mysterious things about the forest. Best to leave alone. We'll keep an eye on it, but my advice would be to keep our distance. And so this thing that you saw, that's probably maybe it's like 100 feet away from the camp.
Can I still see the eyes if I look over there? Are they glowing?
No, it's like when you were looking into the bush, like in the darkness of the shadows created by the foliage, that's where you saw it. But like from a distance, you wouldn't be able to really see it.
I mean, I'm probably going to tell the rest of the camp set up your bedrolls on the other side from that, wherever that was. I'm going to sleep over there. You don't have to sleep next to me, but you might want to.
So you gather up the wood, get the fire going, the friar in a conversation a bit with Waymond, right? Go ahead, Isaac, make me a, what did I say, it was a wisdom check, so you want to roll under your wisdom score.
14.
And is that
under? Oh, yes, it was under, I'm sorry.
Awesome. Yeah. Nice. So you, what is the meal for this evening?
There would be bits of, since we were kind of moving around, he would have picked up a few slight herbs or something, you know, things that he knew, maybe like pepper grass or something, you know, something like that. So he would kind of grinding it up in his hand and chopping it into this dish of, I guess, the food that we have at the moment. They're like rations, right? And so, oh no, we're getting them from the farm, right? So maybe they might have given us like
a lot of like potatoes and radishes and, you know,
okay.
Like so it'll kind be of like hearty vegetables that mm-hmm. a farmer could cultivate and feed his family.
So it'll be like a kind of roasted, like it'll be roasted like vegetables with like a pepper grass on top, kind of just mixed in with maybe a sprint of like mint that he found as well to like garnish. The plate, not bad.
That sounds delicious.
Not bad.
Yeah. I'm looking at the pot and just saying, Fitzpatrick, what do you think about throwing in some rabbit or some sort of meat, like something, something heartier than veggies?
Well, if we had that, I definitely do it. But as you can see, my friend, this is what the good Lord provided, and this is what we have.
Well, let's see if maybe Joffrey has found some additional things that the good Lord has provided. I saw him chasing a rabbit.
Waymond, I would not recommend rabbit stew today. Maybe we stick with the veggies. Long story, don't mess with the animals in Dolmenwood, according to Silas over here, because, just bad news.
Sir Silas says, I would agree. We're not far from our destination. Hopefully tomorrow we can get a early morning start and head up the river. Before you know it, one more day and we will be in the village of Dreg. We'll all be able to get a warm bed and a full belly of whatever you like.
That reminds me of a good story that I'll tell you later tonight on the campfire.
And that
these animals.
That sounds like a fair segue to maybe just jumping around said campfire as it begins to darken, keeping an eye out in the direction of that strangeness that Sir Joffrey saw. But you're getting comfortable with your belly's full from this delectable meal that was prepared from the friar, and you're starting to share some stories. Maybe Waymond is kind of kicking things off, but you've all heard kind of the topic of conversation a bit is things that you've heard about Dolmenwood.
I'd like to sit next as close as I can to the area where Ryan saw the creature. I don't know what you saw, but I'd rather, I mean, I'd still be around the fire, but close enough that I can actually observe while we're talking.
Why don't you give me a d6 roll?
It's a 1.
It is a 1. So 1 is a success, typically on such rolls. So you do hear something coming from that bush, and it sounds almost like a low, very low-toned sound, kind of like the purring of a cat, like a house cat. And I would say that you're hearing this in spite of the fact that Waymond is telling you a story right now. And so your ears are perceiving that, even though there's a crackling fire in front of you, people are enjoying some food, and there is some conversation happening around this fire.
I'm not going to share that yet.
Yeah, and so Wayman's going on about the story. He's just sort of saying, you know, so, I mean, I've never been to Dolmenwood. I don't know the rest of us, but when I was a little boy, my My papa told me the story about Dolmenwood, about the Nag Lord. And so the Nag Lord was this ominous being who controlled the goat folk, the goat people of the region. And they would work to pollute the plants and the animals and give them human-level sentience so that they were as smart or even smarter, wittier than the humans. And of course, they would entice children out at night and lure them into the woods and then eat them or convert them into strange beings. And everyone was afraid that the Nag Lord would encroach into the cities. But they say that as long as you had light lit in your window and you were a faithful, good citizen of the town, that the Nag Lord wouldn't steal your children. So obviously just a fairy tale myth, but just made me laugh thinking of Joffrey chasing some rabbit and getting spooked by it.
Sir Santos kind of shudders, like he's just staring into the fire as you're talking about this. And he says, "The stories of the Nag Lord may be embellished, but it is a very real thing if you were to talk to any Brackenwalder. In fact, the Duke, he's standing army, if you can call it that. I hear that he is even now preparing for the idea that this Nag Lord might emerge from the wood."
"Well, I apologize, Sir Silas. I don't mean to insult. You've been a good friend to me in the prison, but, I mean, come on. Listen to the story. It's clearly just an authoritative system to impart to the people that they should be, you know, proper followers of the rules of the city. Otherwise, some being will steal your children and do evil things to the plants. I mean, poppycock, of course, right?"
"Well, the Duchy of Brackenwald is much older than the Empire. It has claimed dominion of this forest for centuries upon centuries. Something has always stayed its hand. Why has it never gone further from those pieces of territory that it's managed to carve out and civilize? I don't know. Perhaps you are right. Perhaps it is all poppycock, and it is some kind of boogeyman story told passed down over the generations. All I hope is that Marjoram Gryver can be found sooner rather than later so we can leave this place and not have to find out such truth."
"One thing that I brought up, goat people. I have heard that actually in the Duchy of Brackenwald that there were these goat people that actually serve in noble status. I don't know if that is true or not, but I found that odd."
Sir Santos would comment on that and confirm that for you. He'll say he has a bit of knowledge of this region. He did a little bit, or got maybe a little bit more of a kind of briefing from the Crown before heading out, and he'll say that is what my understanding is as well. The goat lords, the goat folk, live side by side with humans in the duchy, and in some case even marry and have families together. It is a bizarre thing for me to think about and grasp, but we should be careful not to insult these people as we are traveling about in the Dolmenwood. There are many cultural things in the Dolmenwood that we may not understand. From what I understand about their caste system, the long-horned goat folk are those that descend from a noble line and are typically those that dictate the fate of their people, and the short-horned goat folk are the common folk.
I know a little bit. Just a little bit. I've spent a little bit of time with books and pens. And the Nag Lord and the goat people aren't the only strange things here. So we don't have windows to put the light out. That bothers me a little bit. The other thing that bothers me a little bit is that we're outside and there's a prince I've heard about, Cold Prince. And he has court of elves, and they sometimes look for travelers. They like to trade things, so maybe we'll see them. That could be fun. That could be a lot of fun. And they'll trade with us. And so we can get some jewels and some silver. And all we have to do is share what we know. Since we don't know very much right now, it could be a very good exchange.
Now, what was that name you said, this prince?
Well, he's called the Cold Prince. He was supposedly once the ruler of the entire Dolmen Wood. Seems like he and the Nag Lord might have a bit of a problem. And from the name, you can imagine that the elves are pretty cold, too. So they don't feel very warm. Maybe they actually turn things icy and cold. Elves are magical. They can do lots of things.
That is interesting. Stephen, do you remember when we were young, the story that Mother would tell us when we asked about these areas so far away? And they told us of a great treasure. She told a fantastic story about a ruler out here in the Dolmen Wood called the Cold Prince that I believe the story went that... he had a great treasure hidden out there in an abandoned fortress that it was possibly protected by magical wards and traps, but that there are legends of this great treasure of the Cold Prince out here somewhere.
Sir DeSantos will add to kind of your stories about the Cold Prince and say, there are many legends of creatures from the land of Faerie in Dolmen Wood. Some say that as the world's oldest forest, that this place has connections to this otherworldly realm of Faerie, and that there are many lords, such as this Cold Prince, that once claimed dominion over parts of the Dolmen Wood, and that their strongholds still exist. Now, I don't know that this Cold Prince, if this is a true story. There are all sorts of fictional characters, I am sure, but one thing is for sure, that since the church came to this region, hasn't been much spoken about notable creatures. It would seem that most things, if they do exist, have retreated into the wild out of sight. One thing is for sure, that these ruins, these fortresses that you speak of, there are many places for Marjoram to hide out in. Many of them could be dangerous.
Well, what say you, Friar? Do you believe in all these fairy tales and stories?
I would say so. Why wouldn't I? As he's kind of just like playing with the hole, like in his tooth, and like his teeth, he's missing the tooth, and he's just kind of using the food out of it, and he's just like, why wouldn't I believe in these things? Just like how the people are able to believe what they want. Why would I have anything different to believe?
Well, I guess I shouldn't be disappointed that a man of the cloth would believe in other fanciful things.
From what I've heard, just like us here, I believe that I've heard that the Brackenwoods themselves, that they kind of went into a pact with I don't know, old gods and such. They would give their souls up to rule the lands for over so many generations. But that time is coming to an end.
Well, Thomas, you've been quiet. Our minstrel, why don't you lighten the mood a bit? Bring us out of these doldrums of fairies and lords and princes.
I think that is a fine idea. And with that, I will pull out a flute and kind of begin playing with a little bit of the words right now. This is kind of a work in process, but mention in the song is about the stones of Dolmen. There's only one particular verse at this particular, but the music is quite nice, and I will not utilize anything to charm anybody.
Wait, what?
We're incidentally charmed.
Correct.
You are but quite it, charming.
But yes, and I will inform everybody that this is a current work in progress.
I would say all these stories connecting this land to fey creatures and Silas's stories certainly give me pause after what I have seen here tonight as well. Very strange place we're entering.
Joffrey, it was a bunny rabbit with eyes that were glowing. Why are you so spooked? It's fine.
I tell you, you all know me. I am not easily spooked. A little nervous from time to time, maybe, but not
very
so
nervous. Very nervous from time to time.
No, I just say I don't spook easy. I'm telling you, I saw something. I wish you would believe me. It was quite unnerving.
I mean, while we've been sitting here and telling these stories and enjoying the fire, I have to say, I started to wonder. I don't think I've ever found a rabbit that purrs.
It purred?
You all, like, get real quiet and focus in. And no, you don't hear it anymore. It has passed.
You know what? I'll tell you this. I'm not a man of the land. I'm not a hunter, a huntress. I don't... I trust you. I'll defer to your opinion about this purring rabbit with glowing eyes. I'll just say this. You know, it's easy to blame, you know, boogeymen like the Nag Lord and the Cold Prince. But sometimes they're just arcane influences. You know, there are powers in the world, and we know that Margaery is searching for ley lines. And there could be much more scientific arcanist explanation. So, just saying, it may not be as simple as a big bad guy out to get us.
He's kind of, as you're talking, he's going to say, you know, I don't think it ever come up why you were put in prison. Why?
Well, I experimented on rabbits, given glowing eyes. Well, okay, so I guess I should say, you know, I was in prison for the crime of studying and experimenting with the arcane arts without the church's blessing. No offense, Friar. I just...
He's still, like, fiddling. Like, huh?
He's like... It's like, I know that you are a man of the cloth and you worship the one true God, but... I just wanted to research, and very specifically, and I'll pull out my quartz, this little quartz gem. Like, I'm studying a spell, trying to perfect it, that harnesses the latent energies of gems. And that was something I pursued on my own, and the church didn't approve of it, and they found out when I was buying some reagents, and I was put in jail. Unjustly. I'm no traitor. I just like to study. And I'll pocket the gem. How about you, Friar?
Well, we're all presuming so much about one another. Apparently, you think it bothers me what you're doing, you know, with the church. It says that you should not be doing that. Your soul itself is forfeit if you're doing that, correct? Do you understand?
I suppose my soul, such as that I exist.
But that is not what the true God says. He is a one of mercy and open-mindedness. I'm happy that you are kind of socking it to that church. It's fine. The whole establishment itself is just loony. It's ludicrous. It's there just to hold us down. We need to... In fact, that is why I was thrown in prison in the first place. I was not paying taxes. This is for the people. What are they going to do with the gold? It's for the people. It should be for them.
You have it right, Friar. We should talk some more. I'm open to hearing a bit more about your interpretation of the one true God.
Joffrey, it's lovely to see you again.
It is always good to see you. You know, mm-hmm. You know, I'm happy to see you, but I'm still angry, as you can hear.
Mm-hmm. Why? Now that we've settled in, why? Why? What are you doing here?
You left the weight of our noble house on my shoulders. I was never raised or prepared to run the house this way. And there's so many rules. You are so good with the books. You know all the rules. I don't understand how it works, and I get confused. I meddled in the wrong lord's affairs, I guess. I found out something I shouldn't have known, and I don't know. They had me placed in jail. I didn't say anything to the higher lord in time. I wasn't sure who actually was in charge. You know how it gets with these houses and the lineage. They did me dirty, and that's why I'm here.
Sir Silas stands, and he just kind of looks at you, and he says, "To uphold one's oath sometimes means sacrificing, making a great sacrifice of yourself to honor that oath you write by your lord. I am certain I would not have brought you along on this quest if, even though we have lost our title, we still keep our oath. And I believe you are a man that your word is your bond, your honor is your life. I apologize, friends. I grow weary, I grow tired. I'm going to retire for the evening, but we should talk about the watch this evening. Do you have a watch order that you'd like to set for second, third, and fourth? Yeah, you can discuss it. So do we want to do Joffrey, Friar, Thomas, and Lilibeth? So you can continue talking, but Sir Silas ends up laying out his bedroll and such and going to sleep. I guess that begs the question. We didn't do what is your relationship to Sir Silas, and is there a story behind why he trusts or stuck his neck out for you?
Well, that could be a great topic of conversation. I have two questions before we dive in. Is there any leftovers?
I think so. You've been able to gather quite a bit of food over the past couple of days, probably storing some up in the canoes as you haven't used it over the past like mm-hmm. 2 or 3 days, so plenty of food to go around.
Yes.
I just want enough to fill this small cup. And if you don't mind,
I'll walk over and actually grab. No, of course, no problem. Take it, and he'll, while you're talking or whatever, he'll go and you can hear him clinking in the background, filling it up.
And really, Friar, this was delicious. I know I would have been even more with the rabbit. So Lilibeth, why don't you tell us a bit about your connection to Sir Silas?
Well, it's an odd connection, actually, because, you know, as we're in prison, and we don't really get a chance to see each other very much. But I think he noticed something. So he came and he had a small conversation with me. And one, he noticed, of course, that I'm vastly outnumbered in terms of my gender. And so he was concerned. I found that to be very touching because, frankly, I probably could have done more harm to most of the people around me than he could, but it was a lovely, kind gesture, and I don't really encounter those very much. So we sat down and we talked about why we were respectively in the prison, and I don't know why he trusts me, other than the fact that I was so incensed that they would debar him for actually keeping an oath, which seems horrible. Something's going on, I can tell, because, I mean, why would anybody bother to really pursue what seems to be a really common activity of tax avoidance? I mean, look at how many of us are here for tax avoidance. Like, and I wasn't even avoiding taxes. Somebody just used some old bills of lading that I filled out in advance in my old job and put them on casks of beautiful, beautiful purple ethnic wine and said that it was swill. So no excise tax on those barrels. Probably somebody made a small fortune, but I certainly didn't do it. So anyway, that's that.
It sounds like you've had maybe some personal conversations with Silas about how did he end up in prison himself. And so I'll just say that in those conversations, you know that the crime that he is accused of is murder. Like, he was accused of murdering the Lord that he was pledged to serve. And he still speaks very highly of his house. Your intuition tells you that he knows who actually did it. But there's something about, like, his oath that's... He thinks it's maybe damaging if he were to reveal it. So he's kind of... He's taking that. He's taking the cover for somebody.
Well, Thomas, you've been quiet since your song, which, by the way, was quite lovely. I can't believe you've brought a flute out on this journey, but it's beautiful. But how do you know Sir Silas? What's your connection? Why would he bring someone like you along?
Well, when we were in... I was accused, rightly so, as being looked for procuring some forbidden knowledge, according to the church. That had to do with my song that I am currently writing. These stones of Dolmen were particular significance. Come across a bit of information and was able to procure it. Word had gotten out that I had this. And I was on the run for about 6 months from the law until I kind of turned myself in. And I pull out this little poster and slap it out, and I say, until I started using my own name, nobody knew who I was. Look at the picture on here. Do you see any likeness between this and myself?
No. It looks great.
Yeah, it looks great. It made me very hard to find. They put these up everywhere, but this is so abhorrent.
When you turn yourself in, did they give you the reward for the bounty?
That's my question. They did not.
Why did you turn yourself in?
I was tired of thinking that people were chasing me, but it turns out that, quite honestly, that they weren't. But my father said, should always be honest, and I just decided I would, rather than live life on the lam. Anyways, Sir Silas, more or less, he'd shown, he'd kind of become a bit solemn in prison, and he found that my stories and my singing brought him a little bit of joy and solace, and also one of the things he asked me to do in, I guess, payment for getting him out other than taking part in this is to write the story.
To me, it sounds like a secondary piece to maybe why Sir Silas would have brought you with is you do have an interest in Dolmenwood and maybe have some incidental, like partial knowledge of things. And so those stones that you speak of, I'm going to say that you know that those stones are what give Dolmenwood its name. Those are the dolmens, those stones that you're looking at. And they are associated with a group of people... A group of men, I guess, called the Droon, who are sort of sorcerer-like boogeymen of the Dolmenwood, and that they are somehow associated with those stones and claim them as their own and claim them as a source of power for them.
I will let everybody know that information.
You've never met or heard of anyone actually meeting a Droon, but they're kind of like with the Cold Prince. It's almost like a legend.
Well, now that we have our story straight, maybe it's time for a nice night of rest.
I agree. I'm gonna get up and go over, again, sort of like set up my roll over closer to that bush. And put out a little bowl.
All right.
Leftovers.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
All right. Did you all have bedrolls of some kind?
I did not roll that, sir.
I did not roll a bedroll, so whatever.
I thought it said on the equipment that was one of the things that you just had with you.
I think you're right. Let's double check that. So it's in the player's guide. There were certain things that you got by default.
Backpack.
Backpack, tinderbox.
Water skin.
No, it was not a bedroll.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Torches. Right.
Backpack, tinderbox, torches.
Rations, and water skin, yep.
So some of you are truly roughing it.
I am roughing it.
Okay. We will resolve the rest roll at the end of the night. See how it was. Roll. What? Go ahead.
My mace will be sufficient enough pillow for me, thank you.
So the charisma roll, did we do that?
Yes, Chris had done that, and it was a success. So it'll be a plus one. And so, anything else before you go to sleep and enter into your watch order?
I'll definitely do my night's prayer. I'd go over to Sir Joffrey and say, Sir Joffrey, do you tell me, do you still? It's been quite a bit, and I really do am happy to see you again, brother.
It is. I'll embrace him and be like, you know I love you.
Are you still sleeping with Binky?
Oh, let's not speak of these things, my brother. But maybe.
That's a strong yes.
You can see, like, a blanket under my chainmail.
Good night, Binky. Good night.
So does the friar, so just to insert some Cleric Church lore, so it is a monotheistic religion, but the faithful of the one true God often have a allegiance to one particular saint. There are hundreds of saints within the religion, and that is sort of where the I guess polytheistic part of it comes from, is that people are usually attached to the parable of one of these saints and what they represented and their kind of mission in life. And so my question is, does a friar have a particular saint that they follow, or a set of saints that they follow?
I mean, I think what I said he would do is he has like a number of prayer cards, and he doesn't want to tie himself down to one, because how fair would that be to just, you know, pray to this one? So he kind of, it's like a deck of cards, he'll and just pick one, and then that's who he's praying to for the night. So,
I like the guy on the mummy that, like, pulls out all those different holy symbols.
That sounds good.
I don't know. Should I?
You want to roll a D100 and pick a saint for the night? Yeah, you could.
Dude, okay. That's a perfect mechanic. I love that.
Yeah.
Saint Waylane of the Sack.
Oh, that's a good one. Ooh.
The miracle of Saint Waylane. He was accused of treason and tax evasion.
No kidding. No kidding.
Waylane was a vicar of low repute and was due to be executed by beheading. The executioner, however, was unable for some reason to bring the axe down upon the saint's neck, his limbs freezing at the apex of every strike. After this execution, the assistant executioner experienced the same anomaly, and no one was able to bring the axe down on his neck, and he was thus pardoned.
What a great saint to pick.
Great, definitely. And I'll even bring Lilibeth in and say, well, listen, I'm not sure how much you partake in such beliefs, but that there is definitely someone looking out for you. I mean, and myself. I mean, wait, that we potentially could have been killed in that prison, but we're here. The axes missed us. The system has stopped. Something is protecting us.
I don't know if I believe all of this, but you do, and it's uncanny. It is uncanny.
I'm just gonna say, you know, and he's gonna just hand it over to you. Maybe just hold on to the card.
Thank you. I rarely get a chance to interact with people except for obviously in prison and with you, so I don't have very many gifts, and this one is interesting. So thank you. And I stick it in my book of recipes for Stewed Rabbit.
Many of you, after all this, you all taking to your rounds of sleep. And we're starting things off here, the first watch going to Sir Joffrey. And so, Sir Joffrey, what is your constitution score?
It is 15.
Okay. So roll me a d20. Don't roll a 1.
A 19.
Okay. So during your watch, you just a little bit mesmerized maybe by the water, the river. And one thing I'll say, I guess this is just a general comment. It's not really about your watch. But you have noticed as you were traveling up the river that at times there are log jammers that seem like they live along the river, and their goal, like especially where there are bends in that river, they would go out and make sure that the lumber just flows. Like it seems like it's coming from north, comes down south, and there's a number of folk along the river, must be people that are paid by the Empire to ensure that wood makes its way where it needs to go. And so you're probably watching the river and noticing some logs and such drifting down. It is kind of prime season for that, the springtime. They can't really do any of that work during the winter, but yeah, during the spring and winter, lots of that type of activity happening on the river. It's a very wide river. It's probably like a mile. It's calm, quiet, full moon out tonight, and it's creating enough light that you're not in complete darkness as the fire is crackling. Your attention continues to be brought over to where that bush is, but you don't see or hear any further disturbance. A couple of hours pass, and it is time for you to wake your brother up.
Norrin.
Time to get up. You had your nap, and now it's time to get up and do your duty, brother.
Oh. Okay, he's gonna just... He'll wake up kind of groggy. Sure. Just rings out. He holds a mace as well, and he'll kind of just... kind of have it just kind of at his hip on his side as he just begins to kind of survey quietly. Just...
So... At the point that you're rising, Sir Joffrey, you have a bedroll, Sir Joffrey? Okay. You're just like trying to find like a comfortable patch to maybe like clump together some of your clothes or random gear to like give yourself a little support. And in those moments where Sir Joffrey, you're probably not quite asleep, but probably drifting to sleep, and Friar Fitzpatrick, you are awaking and checking out the camp, just looking around. You are startled, Friar, as you see around the campfire, there's a small creature with sort of a feline features. It's sitting, and it's got the bowl that was laid out for it near the bush in its hands, and it's like kind of scooping up with its claws, shoveling food into its face. The creature has a very large head. It almost seems like its body shouldn't be able to support it. It's almost like kind of cartoonish, this cat-like creature. It just like has really big eyes, kind of like an Animal Crossing character. like it's just like perpetually surprised, and it's looking at you like it's shocked.
And I'm pretty shocked too.
It's
damn it.
Am I kind of aware of this, or am I like half asleep?
You're like half asleep at this point.
Okay.
He'll go and kind of maybe just really quickly. He's gonna look. Can he tell if it seems? It just looks like he's eating. Right?
He's eating, and it's like looking at you.
And you said he's surprised that I'm kind of just looking at. I'm just like, that's my eyes back at him. I'm just like, ah.
And she starts talking to you, kind of like this purring type of speech. Uh-huh. And she, brown tabby fur, wearing a cape, has a little cape tied around its neck. And she just says, "Hey, nice grub. But do you got any meats? Maybe a rabbit or something? Should have listened to that guy."
He's rubbing his eyes and going, You're talking.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm being rude. Name's Jaspy Poppletail. Nice to meet ya.
Oh, yes, Joffrey. Joffrey, it's nice. It's very nice to meet you. I'm Fry. Who? What?
Jaspy Poppletail.
Like, I know those. I thought that was just. I knew it was just pepper grass. I'm sure of it. This is odd, right? Like, this isn't...
Yeah, you've never seen anything like this before.
All right, good.
Now, did maybe him calling for me wake me up a little bit? So I'm going to kind of, like, get up. I'll see the guy, and I'll probably, like, immediately run to Silas. Just, out of, he's the main man here, so he should be aware of this type of thing out of duty. And I'll kind of wake him, and maybe I'm, you know, fussing around... looking for my weapon now in my skeevies.
Okay.
Like, oh yeah, you know, we got this guy here. We don't know what this is.
Sounds good.
And I'm probably I'm probably being loud.
Yeah, you can see like this creature is like, what's he doing? And you're waking up, Sir Silas is what? And you can see he kind of goes for his sword is in its scabbard like nearby, and he goes to reach for it, and this creature like throws the bowl kind of at you. And, like, gets up and transforms into, like, a house cat and starts to, like, kind of leap away.
The bowl probably would have, like, if he threw it at me, the bowl, it probably would have hit me. Dung, and I wouldn't have moved. I'm still like, ow.
I'll probably just be like, does my eyes deceive me, brother? No. What did you feed us tonight?
I do not know. The food was good, but not that good.
When I see the house cat...
I believe you.
Does it like look reminiscent of the animal that I saw earlier?
Yes. It's about the same size. You haven't really get like a clear idea. Like, you didn't clearly see the creature earlier, but now, like, seeing this weirdness, like, you're...
Like, that's it.
Yeah, you're pretty convinced that it was the same thing.
I do believe that is the same creature I saw earlier.
It liked my food. I guess that's not too bad.
I mean, I don't know if I should have startled him now. We may have been able to get some, ask some questions. It certainly gave me a fright. I
do not blame you. I was in shock myself. Is Sir Silas, he's awake?
He's awake, and he's just standing over by his bedroll, and he looks like... He's wearing an expression on his face that just looks like he's working up the courage maybe to say something.
Should we wake the others?
We have a problem. I think so.
Problem.
The bag with our coin is gone.
We should wake the others?
Well, it bears a discussion.
Which way did it go?
And you're looking towards the tree line of the Dolmen Wood. The direction that it went.
I think that it would be great to maybe wake up Lilbeth.
Yeah, I think we're going to wake. Joffrey will probably go about just waking everyone up and just being there's been an encounter. Something has happened. No
what
problems.
Happened?
We have it under control.
It was real.
Why are we waking up?
We're just walking. It was real. That little cat, it spoke to me.
Oh, the mommy, cat. I don't want to go to school. I have some more rabbit stew.
What? The cat spoke to you?
Yes.
Gave me an awful fright, and I believe possibly we gave it an awful fright as well. Well, at first it hissed at us, and then it ran away, but...
You didn't see the pouch in its mouth or anything?
No. I did not know that monies was missing until Sir Silas told us so. Though he did have a mischievous look about him, for sure. Very big, a huge eye.
I have to ask the question. You know, Joffrey, you're out in the woods. Did you see any delicious-looking mushrooms?
Now listen, knowing my brother's lack of, you know, duty and all that, I wouldn't be surprised if he was trying to have us have a nice time.
I do not lace anyone else's food anymore.
I mean, it was in the middle of our camp, in the middle of the night. It did take our money. Let's not forget that this beast, be it fey or otherwise, is clearly without honor.
We also can't give up the possibility that there was more than one of them here. If you were engaged with it, perhaps it was a decoy or distraction.
That is true.
It was quite distracting.
Well, either way, we're going to have a big problem. There's going to be likely tolls and taxes, and we have to pay for lodging once we get into the Dolmen Wood. I suppose maybe we can hawk these canoes, but that's not going to give us much to sustain us.
It sounds to me like we are now left with no choice but to hunt down this wretched thief and take our money back.
He told me his name was Jaspy Puppletail.
And you're sure it was a cat wearing a cape and not like some child.
No, it was a guy. I know what I saw. It was. It's quite. It looked actually very nice. I wish I got to know him a bit better.
But... Has anybody heard of such a creature?
Well, I mean, the myth of the Naglord is that he would make creatures sentient to take over the Dolomwood, but it was just a story.
And this definitely seemed like it was something else that turned into a cat, right? It was like a kind of more humanoid looking.
Yeah, it was basically a like Cheshire cat, you know, creature. Mm-hmm. And then it transformed wild shaped, if you will, into a house cat.
I'd like to track not hunt, but track at least.
All right. Got a 50% chance. So I'm going to roll this real quick. And yes, so you head out kind of in the direction that they tell you that they saw it dart, which will confirm for you that it would appear you find two such sets of tracks that seem to be feline
pair.
Hair.
Do I catch them?
Well, do you want to, in the middle of the night, go into the Dolmenwood?
No.
No rest?
No.
No. They are certainly, after all this, inside the forest somewhere.
Well, I can see where their tracks are and where they've come to our camp, right? I've done what I could, and I think I owe you all an apology. I was just curious. I didn't think to tell you what I was doing. And it might not have been so shocking if you'd at least known I was trying to get it to come closer.
So I think, unless you're telling me, like, are we in agreement that it would be a bad idea to go into the forest right now to track this thing down?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, yeah, my character would suggest that we get our night's sleep and then head out after the tracks in the morning.
Okay, so we will do some con checks for some of you. Who did not have a bedroll?
I did not.
Okay, so maybe everybody. So what you'll do is you'll make a con check. You want to roll under your con, but you'll get a bonus based on some of the things you did. So camaraderie worked. We're going to say that the fire worked for this first night, so that'll be a plus. And
so minus two, right?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, that going the other way. And then the food was a success. So you subtract three off of your roll.
I passed.
Me too.
That was close.
It was really close.
We subtract three from our roll.
Subtract three. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I rolled it five. So three should be two.
Good. Yeah. Yep. So it sounds like everyone was good. You're kind of used to roughing it at this point and getting comfortable with that. So the question that I think we're going to leave this session with is, are you going to track? You have a lead. We'll continue to use that. At least for one hex, you've got a successful track that you could follow these tracks of these creatures, or you want to continue by canoe and continue forward.
We need money. I think we should at least chase them. See,
yeah, we'll have no toll money to get further down the river.
So we don't necessarily need to kill the things. We just need to get the money back.
My question to Silas is, how much was in it? If it was 2 or 10, may not be worth it, but if it was significant.
It's significant.
I had 40.
Yeah, how much? Let's see. I have a tally here. Let's see. So I have, he himself had 90 gold he was carrying. Winston had 40 gold. Isaac had 11 gold left over. How much, Chris, did your character have?
17.
Ryan?
Joffrey only had 7.
7? And Marine?
Had an even 10.
10. So it's well over 100, about 150, 60, almost 170 gold. I think our next session will pick up with the beginning of the day heading in, trying to track this Grimmelkin creature, try to get your gold back. Well, that was a little bit of gameplay, so you can kind of get a feel of, you know, yeah, like there's a lot of these kind of processes that kind of facilitate like this, the survival aspect. But then, yeah, that that encounter, that was a random encounter. That was something that was rolled off of a table. So that's pretty much how most of this stuff is going to be. And then I rolled like its kind of disposition to the party, like kind of what is it up to. Most of this is just it's random kind that's of, awesome. And we're going to string the whole thing together.
I'm loving like the slow burn of everything.
Yeah.
I like the pace. Yeah, it's very nice.
Very comfy Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed. Indeed.
So I guess this will bring us, I didn't forget, we'll maybe wrap everything up with a round of gratitude. So I'll just sit, kind of leave it open, like anybody that wants to like kind of start things off and say, you know, something to one of the other players or just in general to the group about something that made it a good session for you, something that was positive that you appreciated.
Yeah, well, I'll jump out. I'll be lame and just say generally, I think everybody is really into it, and your characters and your background and your connection and like vibe is just really infectious. I'm excited about how this is going to go. So just kudos to everybody on the team. And that's not, you know, that's cheap, but
throwing it out there. I'm going to follow it up with some more cheap, because that was exactly what I was going to say. I think we've, you know, with it being early and I guess maybe not everything fleshed out with our characters, I think everybody did a really good job of kind of hopping in there and making it flow, and appreciation to Alex for getting this set up. I'm very, very excited on what this will bring. So thank you, everyone.
What I really appreciated about this is there was a lot of discussion that happened before the game, and I did not get a chance to be part of that. And yet it was possible for me, and I really didn't, you know, like all the backstory things that actually sort of weirdly came together was pretty, pretty interesting. It does feel sort of uncanny. So I appreciate that very, very much. And I also appreciate that I really am getting a chance to work collaboratively with a group of people. The collaboration is evident right from the beginning. So thank you.
Yeah, that's awesome. I would say I'm going to call out Winston on apprehension your character has to what everything is going on, kind of not believing everybody. That's something that I didn't see coming like into play, and it's adding like an interesting dynamic, and it's part of that like kind of jamming thing I was talking about. We kind of jammed on this, and this is where we ended up. And I in that collaboration, I find it just cool that we kind of ended up in this place in the story and with our characters in that. And I think that was cool.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And it was perfect how you saw the critters, and then you had your brother. And I'll give the kudos too to like to Ryan and Isaac having the brother, sort of like, just for anyone watching, like that was completely emergent because they just accidentally picked last names that were almost the same. So they were like, what if we're brothers? And like the fact that y'all just sort of played it out like that was the plan all along, that was really good. So I enjoyed that. And like y'all seeing the cat like together, like that was just, it was a good like bonding connection.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Especially because they definitely didn't believe him
before.
Yeah. That was the one like, ah. I think, yeah, I'm thankful for, well, I mean, it's already said that, you know, I'm thankful for what we have here because I think it's going to be great. I liked you rolling with the little binky thing. I figured a big brother kind of hazing his little brother a bit. And I was happy that you, Vindler, were like, yeah, still got it. I enjoyed that. That was nice.
I think my kudos goes to Chris and Maureen for jumping in so late on the whole thing. We kind of did a little last second shift to bring some people in to have a full group. And I appreciate that the two of you are willing to kind of last second come in after, kind of Maureen, you said it a little bit, that we did have a lot of discussion amongst ourselves, and then it could feel a little alienating maybe, like coming in after the fact, but I think the two of you brought in really cool characters, and just generally to all of you, I gave each of you a rumor to incorporate, and it was felt very organic the way you were having that conversation and pulling that in. So I guess just thanks to all of you for kind of fully embracing the setting and making it already kind of feel real. Like we talked a little bit about tone, and it's like, it's kind of hitting that for me. So that's awesome. Well, I think that brings us to the conclusion. Thanks for hanging out a little bit later than I had scheduled, just so we could do both the session zero and get a tiny bit of gameplay in. We're coming back here next weekend already, Saturday morning. At 10 a.m. Central is when Dolmenwood will be streamed live on twitch.tv/20sidestoeverystory. If you're watching this on YouTube, thanks for watching the replay. We'll have, I guess, we'll throw our Discord link here in the Twitch chat if you want to come and join us there. And we've got a channel dedicated to Dolmen. Would you come hang out with us, talk about that, talk about any of the other D&D tabletop things we have going on. And quick plug for the community campaign. We talked about it, referenced it a little bit during the session zero, but we do have this campaign. It's a 5e campaign that is open really to anybody who wants to, that thinks we're cool enough to hang out with them. And you want to play a D&D game with us, we have that open. It's just jump into our Discord server and let us know that you're interested, and we'll show you how to sign up and create a character and get involved at that. So if you really appreciate what we're doing, you can always support our Patreon. I'll throw that link in the Twitch chat. It'll also be in the description of the video. But that is, if you really like what we're all doing, the DMs of the channel, that helps to support our community campaign and the content that the DMs are creating and putting together. So I think that's it. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you all soon.
20 sides to every story.